the government. Larry, you wanna?
Yes. Chair Hill and committee members, before you today, we are dealing with issues relating to the Department of State Police's budget. Actually, we don't have the bill before us, but this relates to Senate Bill 5538. What I placed before you was some recommendations relative to five issues that were discussed in the subcommittee, and with the committee's concurrence, these would be recommendations that would be passed on to the Public Safety Subcommittee that is in fact addressing the state police budget for the subcommittee, Public Safety Subcommittee, to consider in its deliberations on this budget. The first item relates to a policy package that's in the state police's budget relating to the public safety data warehouse, approximately $1.7 million in other funds from the burn grant, and one FTE. LFO's recommendation is that you approve that package with a qualifying budget note that would provide them with some direction to develop the project scope document, the project schedule, a staffing needs assessment, and identify required data elements, as well as develop measurable performance goals and a budget. This project has identified funding for phase one of it. There's approximately four phases that are planned, and there is no identified funding source for those others. So the development of this background information will be helpful to the interim committees, as well as those responsible for developing subsequent governor's recommended proposals. That's item one. Do you want to discuss that, or who won?
Let's just, we're going to adopt them all at the whole end.
Okay. Item number two relates to the base budget for the desktop systems within the state police budget. As was discussed in committee, there, due to a budget reduction made to achieve the governor's recommended budget of $550,000 in the base, there is a currently within the division of the Information Communication Management Division, a shortage of approximately $262,500 for them to stay on track with a four-year desktop system replacement. So the committee expressed interest in adding money back into the state police's budget to address that shortfall, and LFO's recommendation on that issue is consistent with co-chair's budget strategy that was distributed to staff last week. We placed that item on a subcommittee's priority list for restoration or enhancements when decisions regarding the co-chairs and leadership budget are finalized. Item number three relates to the 911 program, which this committee discussed and will have pick up in subsequent discussions when House Bill 2098 is addressed. It is currently being referred to Ways and Means and hasn't been assigned to a subcommittee yet. However, in the meantime, the issue came up about the expenditures that relate to the 911 program. These total approximately $44.7 million in the governor's recommended budget. Under the proposed governor's recommended budget, those are non-limited other funds, and the discussion in the committee, as well as LFO's recommendation, is that those funds be placed under the limited portion of the budget. And so LFO has put together a recommendation that is basically covers two contingencies. If House Bill 2098 lifts the sunset and the similar projected revenues are realized, then approximately $44.7 million would need to be placed under the limited portion of the state police budget. If, however, the state police budget needs to move out of Ways and Means ahead of House Bill 2098, LFO's recommendation would be that the state police budget only includes limitation for the portion of 911 revenues that are projected to be received up to the date of the sunset, which is December 31, 2001, which is about $16.5 million. In that case, the remaining limitations, we would recommend that you attach that to the House Bill 2098 action, which at this point we don't know whether that would affect either the level of revenue or its allowable uses, but we recommend that we address that limitation separately should that bill move after the budget. Item number four is the CGIS technology plan, and this committee discussed at length this plan and the numerous concerns over the timeline for development of that plan. Consistent with the committee's direction, LFO's recommendation is that we unschedule a portion of the Information Communication Management Division's budget, approximately $1.6 million, until they can provide a report to a joint legislative committee. And I have drafted a suggested budget note that the agency has seen and provided input on to accomplish the goals that were discussed both in subcommittee and with the agency. That's all.
Any discussion?
Just for the record, on number four, the CEGIS technology plan, I did meet with the CEGIS group this morning from 10:30 to 11 prior to session. This suggested budget note was in response to what I believe was maybe not an intentional, I don't believe it was intentional, but a failure to really comprehend the scope of the budget note that we put into a year ago. I just wanted to say that. I appreciate the CEGIS group working together. I think that this lays out, and I think it's clear that we want them to step back, because they are in charge of the CEGIS group, step back and really look at the criminal justice system as an integrated system and prioritize which components of the criminal justice information systems need to be prioritized in order to achieve a more holistic system.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I'd move our recommendations to the Ways and Means Public Safety Subcommittee as suggested by Legislative Assistant.
Representative Patridge moves that the committee adopt a recommendation to the Public Safety Subcommittee of the Joint Ways and Means Committee as outlined and discussed here. Any discussion?
Mr. Chairman. So the funding for the extension of 911 is dependent on passage of House Bill 2098, and that money will be unscheduled until the bill is passed.
Chair Hill and Senator Yee, the recommendation is that, yes, the funding will be contingent upon passage, because if the sunset isn't lifted, the revenue would cease to be collected on December 31st. If the budget passes out of Ways and Means without that legislation ahead of it, we would recommend that the limitation not be placed in, actually it wouldn't even be in the budget. We would attach it to House Bill 2098. So there really wouldn't be any unscheduling.
It would not be there.
It would be attached to House Bill 2098, so that when it passed, the necessary limitation would be then added into the state police budget.
I see. Mm-hmm. Okay. That answers my question.
Any further discussion? Is there any objection to the recommendations? That objection? So ordered. Chair would move to take the State Police Information Technology Initiative. There's a other funds program for $10,000, the use of GIS information pilot study. Chair would move to take that to $1, pending the return on a written plan to the appropriate legislative committee.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Law.
You mentioned $10,000. I thought it was $100,000 down to $1. Did I get it wrong?
It's $10,000.
Okay.
No, this is a different one.
Oh, thank you.
Any discussion? Is there any objection? That objection? So ordered. Any further discussion on the recommendations to the Public Safety Subcommittee on the State Police Budget? With that, we will close our work session on the State Police. And that, thank you, Senator Hanning.
You bet.
For sitting in. And with that, we'll now bring up a public hearing on information systems overview for the Department of Human Services. Welcome. Basic overview of where we're at.
I hope you didn't mind my asking, where did the 46 positions come from?
See,
I didn't know the chair was kidding.
Hold on. That's fine.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Department of Human Services is back before you again today to continue their presentation. We have Mr. John Cuddy, who is the Director of the Office of Information Services with the Department, and Geronimo Tagatak, who is with the Department of Administrative Services, IRMD. The notebook that you have before you, I believe that they got through tab number two, and so we'll be at tab number three.
Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For your record, my name is John Cuddy, and I'm the Chief Information Officer for the Department of Human Services. Before we start on three, I'd like to make one correction and one clarification back at the very tail end of tab one. The next to the last page that starts, it's a chart that says IT support for 9,700 users. There is a line at the very bottom of that page that says network and desktop support technicians. That is not correct. What that is that the number of people in information services, the 391 number that we had given you before, that's 9,700 divided by 391 for the bottom bar there, the 1-to-25 ratio. So if you would just strike out that bottom line on that, it is then accurate. And then on the next page, just a clarification on the very bottom, very last line of the next page that says average, at the bottom says average spending per user. Those are annual numbers, not biennial.
I'm sure it would be appropriate to double on that.
Yes, it would. Okay, with that, if we can move on to tab three. And, Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that what you'd like to try to get through today is 3, 4, 5, and 7, and that 6, which is the summary of our ongoing development projects, we'll address, the committee would like to address at another time. So with that, I'll start with 3 and try to move through this fairly quickly, subject to whatever questions you all may have. The purpose of this tab is to try to give you some sense of what your investment in information technology in the Department of Human Services has yielded for the current biennium. The one thing that is not on there that I want to mention at the start is that the major part of what we do is involved in maintaining the current operations of information systems. And the stuff in the picture in tab one on the very first page of the presentation that talks about the number of servers that we support, the number of lines of mainframe code, the checks that are produced, the online transactions that we process, those are all part of the ongoing operation of information technology in the department. And so the vast majority of what we do is really involved in that, keeping current operations going. And what's here on this on these three or four pages in tab number three are really things that we have done that I thought were worth noting as far as sort of many of them independent of the ongoing operations, just some things that I thought it would be worth telling you that we're doing in addition to those current operations. Oregon Access, which is one of our main client server systems that serves primarily entirely the SDSD division, we made some significant improvements in the response time in that system, creating some considerably happier users. The DS Servers project, which is one of the ones that we'll be talking about in tab six, which is the decision support surveillance and utilization review subsystem of the MMIS system. We got that started this biennium. We've selected but not contracted with yet a contractor to do that work for us. ORCA 2, which is the replacement system, and that's also going to be discussed in or covered in tab six, which is the replacement system for what serves vocational rehabilitation. And ORCA 2 is primarily the web-enabled version of that, which will be our first foray into web-enabling, which we're pretty excited about because we see some distinct advantages about that. And I'll talk a little bit about that when we get to tab 7 and talk about how we do supportive PCs and the desktop. We got that project started. We achieved Y2K compliance, which was a big one for us, cost us $44 or $45 million, and took an awful lot of work by an awful lot of people. Very pleased with how that went. Skipping down onto the next page, I'm not going to go through every one of these, but if there's something I don't cover you'd like me to talk about, I'd be happy to do that. The third bullet down on the next page, we are required by the federal government to become compliant with what's called SACWIS, which is a set of federal requirements around child welfare. And the FACES system, which we have been developing for a number of years and recently put into maintenance mode, having finished the actual development projects successfully, received SACWIS certification. So we're pleased and happy about that. The next bullet, TRACS, which is the system that was originally developed for AFS and is primarily, does some other things, but primarily provides for a common case narrative, is now one of the key enabling technologies as we're moving toward service integration in the department. And TRACS, in fact, is now used by more than 1,000 community partners, and we've expanded the scope of TRACS to allow that to happen. And TRACS is the key enabling system for the service integration work that's being done in the Rogue Family Center in White City. And we expect that the use of TRACS by community partners as we start developing a more integrated service delivery system will increase considerably.
I'm sorry, I don't know where White City is.
Jackson County.
Okay, so it's
near Medford, right outside Medford, yeah. It's actually, Mr. Chair, it's a city that's not a city, I'm told. It's called White City, but it's not incorporated, which is unusual. The MMIS project, which the legislature gave us the funding in this current biennium to begin, has been initiated, and as at least the chair knows, those who are on the JLCINT, we've been reporting regularly to that committee during the interim about the headway we're making on the MMIS system. And we also have, as part of our policy option package for the upcoming biennium, we have a request for funding to continue the development and continue of the new MMIS and continue with that project. HIPAA, we talked at some length, and I know we're going to talk at much greater length in the future with you all. We talked about at some length in our previous meeting last week. And there are actually two rules that are out. We have completed a gap analysis of the first rule, which really starts to give us a handle on what we need to do for the MMIS system around that. I should mention that actually that should say gap analysis for MMIS. It is not for some of our other systems that are going to be looked at next.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question on MMIS. Has the department considered it might be less expensive and more timely to contract the MMIS project?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, we are about to embark on a part of the project that will determine our business needs. And one of the things that I have said from the time we started this is that we would look at every option. We would consider in-house development. We would consider transferring from another state an existing system. We would consider a consortium with other states. And we would also consider contracting out or outsourcing. So we're going to be going through an activity over the next 12 to 15 months, depending on when we get our contract signed, to actually examine that as an option, and that will be one of the things we'll be considering. And then what we'll do is once we get recommendations from our contractor, who's going to help us with our business needs, is we'll come back to the legislature and talk about what we think we would like to do and why, and ask for input and support from the legislature. Mm-hmm. That is definitely one of the options that we will be considering. Mm-hmm.
Follow-up.
Senator
Mr. Chairman, because I understand many other states contract MMIS out, and since there's already existing models that's doing it, it might be much more efficient than to develop our own. And I understand from previous discussion, it would take 5 years to develop our own. So as far as time-wise, there's a lot of benefits too.
Mr. Chair, mm-hmm. Senator Yee, yes, and that's, again, one of the things that we'll certainly be looking at. One of the unique or at least unusual things about Oregon is that we are heavily into managed care through the Oregon Health Plan, and a number of the other systems, as I understand it, that are contracted out around the country tend to be more in the traditional fee-for-service mode. But it may be that by the time we're ready to make this decision, there may be more options in that arena because others are developing these things in other states as well. But yes, we'll, I understand your point, and we're very much aware of that.
Mm-hmm. John, did you, when you start using these acronyms, could you tell us what the acronyms
yes, I'm sorry.
Stand for, or maybe give us a glossary that you can go back and refer to?
Mr. Kerr, I'm not, to be honest with you, I'm not sure that I know what all the acronyms stand for exactly. When I can, I will, but we'll get you a translator for you.
Thank you.
Let's see, we mentioned HIPAA. NEDS is a, and I do not know what that is.
National Employee Disease.
National Electronic Disease Something System. It's for our health division, it's a federal grant to do this. There is a, it's 100% federal, and again, we'll be talking about that in tab 6.
John, when you say 100%, is it that the initial cost
yes.
to develop the operation becomes?
Mr. Chair, the operation, it's the usual problem you get with the feds where they sink the hook in, and then often when it comes down to the ongoing operation, it's a different story. Yes, that is true. One of the things that we've had, because of the history of how information technology was centralized in the department, we have a lot of systems that have been developed with different approaches and methodologies. And that has concerned me for a while, and one of the things that we started working on after we finished Y2K about a year ago was the creation of a project management office to help us make sure that we had standard project management methods as we were doing our development work. And we've created that office, and part of what we'll be doing as in relation to that is also working on trying to create more standard development methodology as well as a project management methodology. We've put a lot of our people through the excellent project management training that DAS has been offering. We're very pleased with that. That's done us a lot of good, helped us with current I should say common terminology, helped us to view more things as projects. In fact, the reorganization plan for the department that was just created and made public here in early February, some of our project management expertise helped in the management of that activity to create that plan. So we're really trying to be a resource for the department in project management capability, and the project management office will help us, is helping us with that as well as with our own projects. Related to that, I mentioned this in the last bullet there in that section, I mentioned this the other day. We also created a data resource management unit, which is helping us with a better definition and usage of our data in the department. Again, because of the history with all of these different divisions doing their own definitions of data and things like that, we've got a lot of inconsistency and have seen fit to create a specific group to help us pull the data together, because we're going to need that better data integration if we're going to do a better job of supporting the departmental service integration, which is the where the department is headed. In our computer center, we made some significant.
I just had a question on your data standards. HIPAA sets a lot of those data standards anyway. Are we going to have big HIPAA problems down the line?
Mr.
With
Chair,
the current systems that are in place.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, yes, we will. All of them that deal with health care. We know this, especially about the MMIS system, which we have done that first preliminary analysis of. It happens coincidentally that our HIPAA expert is sitting here, and he agrees.
Geronimo, my understanding is that you headed up a team with DAS looking at HIPAA and its implications.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Geronimo Tagatech, DAS, IRMD. Yes, that's true, Mr. Chairman. For DAS, IRMD, put together a forum of agencies and distributed information on HIPAA. And we did hold an orientation session on HIPAA and polled initially agencies with regards to the impact of HIPAA. And the information that we're getting right now is not complete. One of the things that concerns us is to get agencies, and I'm not including DHS in this, because DHS, I think, is ahead of the curve on HIPAA, but there are a number of other agencies we do want to have to take this thing pretty seriously.
Mr. Chair, just for record, and I've gone to a couple national things on HIPAA through long-term care associations and everything else. They're estimating in the healthcare field, at least, that so we have more of an effect than Y2K did in terms of numbers and the costs. And so I'm just interested, as you as we go through these, you know, what are we doing to prepare now to do that? I don't want to be faced with because we've got a while, but I don't want to be faced with a whole bunch of back-end loaded numbers. And I don't know if we've taken a similar approach that we did to Y2K, where we did some analysis where DAS kind of spearheaded that, and I didn't know if that was the approach as well.
It is, Mr. Chairman, Representative Patridge.
If I could add something to that as well, in our last session, I don't think Representative Patridge was here when we talked about it a little bit. One of our health plans, I mentioned this before, one of our health plans said that Y2K had cost them $50 million, and they expected HIPAA would be $150 million. Hmm. Just to support what Representative Patrick just mentioned. The other thing also I would reiterate as well is we do not have any money in this budget for HIPAA. There is no money proposed in this budget currently for HIPAA. And part of the reason for that is we're not far enough along to be able to get a good estimate of what we think it's going to cost us. And it's my understanding that the chair would like to have a separate discussion specifically about HIPAA. And hopefully we can talk in more detail and at greater length about it then.
In that line, Geronimo, is there a time frame between now and, say, the end of March where you're going to have better information so that if we were to hold a day session and talk about strictly about HIPAA and its impact to existing systems, drive to get some better information? I don't know what your time frame is.
Mr. Chairman, we don't have a strict time frame at this point. What we're going to be doing is addressing the governor's IT roundtable, which is composed of a number of agency representatives, and coming up with a time frame for sure.
Moving down to the bottom of 3-2 about the computer center, and I'll just give you a couple highlights here. One of the key things that a lot of our divisions are concerned about is sometimes our overnight processing keeps some of the systems down in the morning, and so when people come in, the systems aren't available to them at the beginning because of delays or problems or something with overnight production runs. And one of the significant accomplishments we've done this biennium is we've reduced our nighttime production run times so that we're having much better availability of these systems early in the morning for people when they come to work. Another thing that we did, the third bullet down on the next page, we've installed some software that allows us to review, allows people to review reports online. And so that is having a significant reduction in the amount of paper that we have to print, cost of paper, distribution of reports, and that sort of stuff. It was, to me, frightening to think that the largest computer center in Oregon government had no backup power. And in fact, in the flood in 1996, when that building was shut down, we were out of business for about a week because the mainframe went down also. And so one of the things we've done this biennium is install a backup generator and uninterrupted power supply, so at least we can stay in control of our own destiny if we have a problem with the utility power. Moving down to network support, we went to the new release of GroupWise and installed that throughout our system. We did some significant upgrades in our network infrastructure related to servers and our wide area network devices. And as a consequence, the network is more reliable and performs better now than it has, and we continue to try to make those improvements whenever we can. And we installed MetaFrame, the last bullet on that page, in the Rogue Family Center in White City, and MetaFrame allows us to stage a bunch of different systems, county and state, so that somebody can have on their desktop access to all these different systems. Now, this does not integrate them in the sense that the data crosses over, although what it does mean, though, is with the proper password and access, people can see a lot of different things, and they can look up a client in one system and another system, and it helps them to a great extent with providing integrated services. And the people down there are very happy with it. The one caution that I always say, and I will say here as well, is that we have not yet totally pinned down the cost model for that. We are not entirely sure how many people can fit at the same time on one server, and so we still are doing some work to try to figure that out before we get too far into it, although we have said that we have some other counties that we're doing some prototype work for service integration on that we're going to make MetaFrame available. But whether we're going to end up doing that statewide or not, I'm not yet sure, although it has been a big success in White City.
How many circuits do you have going into White City?
Mr. Chair, I don't know. I believe just the one to that building. I can find out and get back to you if you'd like.
Could you?
Yep.
Besides the circuits, can you let us know how much bandwidth you're trying to allocate for your users?
In White City?
Yeah, yes. On a per-user basis.
Yes.
So then we can see on a rollout. I just did a big Citrix project at my company. So.
Oh, okay.
So that, I'm interested to know, bandwidth-wise, where you guys are at versus the standards that I'm aware of in terms of Jim's issue, so that way we'll know how many people are going in.
How about if you just give us a topology in terms of in committed information that's going up?
Yes, I'd be happy to. I also, Mr. Chair, would it be helpful for a conversation for Representative Patridge about it, or would you just like kind of a written thing for the committee? Would you like an offline conversation just to share war stories?
Oh, no. If you just give us something written for the committee. I mean, I'm pretty familiar with the technology, so.
Be happy to do that. Moving on to 3-4, We also started doing, and this was from a policy option package from the current biennium, we got some staff to improve our, what we call the system of support, which is our help desk, our network support. And part of we use that is to create a small group that is doing end-user technical training. The problem that we have in the system of support is that if we have poorly trained end-users, they put pressure on all the rest of it downline. They put pressure on our help desk. They put pressure on our desktop support people. They put pressure on our local support people. And so I've been pushing very hard to try to improve our end-user training because that relieves pressure on the rest of the system. And so we got managed to get started a small end-user training group by any of them. We put Windows NT on all of our desktops. So we did that. This biennium, we had had a mixed bag out there ranging from PC DOS up through Windows 3.1 all the way up the line. And we now have almost entirely, with the exception of some older systems that have to have some of those older Windows releases, we now have an entirely NT operation.
Let me jump back up here in terms of, I don't understand. Implemented functions. Did you do an organizational program? Are there people that are out training?
Yes, Mr. Chair, yes. We actually have six people who are doing end-user training and offering that to our end-user community.
How does that relate to the DAS STARS with the training program?
Steps, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. State technical education program.
Mr. Chair, we have some of our people use that, but this this is a separate thing that we do.
Yeah, I'm trying to understand in terms of, are we going out and buying programs, or are we doing computer-based training, or are we just, we have six people go out and say, this is how you use Word. My understanding, that's what STEPS has, those levels of classes in it as well. My question is in terms of, are you fully looking at STEPS and integrating and using the STEPS program, or are we out creating another program to compete with STEPS? You know, if we just got together, we could, you know, save by reducing, you know.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a real good answer for you because I'm not tremendously familiar with STEPS. If you would like, we get back to you with something about that. And another, moving on then, the another thing which for me was a major milestone in this environment that is very non-standard, as I've mentioned last week to the committee, we now have approved desktop standards for the department, and we're going to talk a little bit more about those in Section 7. I'm very pleased with that. We've also implemented for the first time a standard centralized process for approving IT purchases. This had all been done previously in our divisions, and divisions, as I mentioned before, basically purchased whatever made sense to them, and we now have a control of our purchasing and are making those purchases whenever possible adhere to standards. Just a couple of general things. We've also made some improvements in the way that we do governance for IT in the department. We've set up some processes around getting decisions in a timely way and making sure that decision makers are briefed about the nature of the decision they're being asked to make and things like that. We've also produced, once again, a departmental IRM plan for the upcoming biennium. That's currently in draft, and we have not yet submitted that to DAS, but quite far along.
When will we be able to see?
Pardon?
When will we be able to see that?
Mr. Chair, you can see the draft right now, if you like. Would you like a copy?
Please.
Yes. Be happy to do that. Finally, something I'm especially proud of, we've put some effort into quality. And we received a certificate of achievement from the Oregon Quality Award, which I consider to be pretty pleased with for a brand new organization that was, when we actually made the application, had been in existence for about 3 years. So with that, if I can move to talking about strategic direction in tab four. In this section, the sentences at the beginning of a section, the first one is DHS investments in IT should provide the greatest possible value to the citizens of Oregon. These are more statements of value, and then under those are some statements of strategy. And I, again, don't propose to go through this in great detail, but just to give you, try to give you some highlights. Some of the ways that we're going to try to provide the greatest possible value are to, wherever possible, provide information and accept applications for our services electronically. I mentioned to the committee last time we talked about the fact that one of the big problems you have in information technology is that most of this stuff that you get never goes away. And so we have a, I would guess, hundreds of millions of dollars invested in our so-called legacy systems. And instead of replacing those for additional hundreds of millions of dollars, I think one of the strategic things that we're trying to do and we need to do is try to figure out a way to leverage our investment and get the most out of it that we can. So that's one of the things that we're focusing on. Another way to try to provide value is to create a standard environment, standardized hardware and software. Again, as I've said before, the department has a very unstandard environment, which is expensive to support and not as reliable as it could be. And so moving toward a standard environment will get us much better value.
John, along that line, is there ways you can articulate in terms of those savings, in terms of where they're materializing, so we can try to understand in terms of the impact of the decisions we've made in terms of the standardized, and so we can sort of see that we didn't do this, but we did this, and therefore here's the delta.
Mr. Chair, I can try to do that. We're just getting started on this, so I can't cite a lot of specific efficiencies or savings, but I can certainly talk about some of the advantages that we see in that. And maybe we can talk a little about that when we get to seven and start talking about our desktop environment. So, another strategy that we want to do to try to create the most value we can is to centralize our management and support of our systems. We're looking at products that allow us to administer our desktops so look from a more central perspective. I mentioned last time the second phase of the consolidation of IT in the department that was just undertaken is still going on, but started last year. And I mentioned earlier the project management office. And another way that we think we can be as provide as much value as possible is to make sure that our infrastructure is based on not only the state standards that DAS produces, but also as much as possible industry standards. We've had too much in this department of, the way I used to say it in a sort of a smart aleck way in the beginning when we consolidated seven different DP shops to create this central group, I used to say that we had seven different DP shops going in eight different directions. And that was kind of true. And so we've spent the last 5 years really starting to try to pull that together and create a more standard environment. And another thing is that the decisions about IT were historically made by our divisions. And so one of the things that we're moving toward now in a strategic direction is to create an environment where priorities are really set from a departmental perspective, and we believe that will add a lot more value as well. And that really gets us to the next major value here on the next page, which is that IT is going to be viewed from a departmental perspective.
John, before we go there,
yes.
Let's go up and you're the first value is provide information acceptance applications electronically. In terms of, do we know how many separate web servers, or are we consolidating all the web functions in DHS into one central point yet?
Mr. Chair, we have not. We have a group that has just begun, either, I'm not sure whether they started this week or about to start this week, to actually work on that. We've got a ton of web servers all around. You may or may not know that NT allows anyone who has NT to create, to turn that PC into a web server. And we believe we've got a lot of people out there who know how to do that or figured out how to do that. We've got a lot of them.
Mr. Chairman, does that mean like one portal of entry? I'm trying to grasp and put my arms around the terms.
Multiple ports of entry.
From one side.
And there's no suggestion that there's a link from one to the other.
But that's what, that would be desirable, would it not?
A single, yes, one element would save a tremendous amount of money and give us better control on the content.
Kind of like what California was doing as in their presentation.
Exactly.
Oh, let's go there as fast as possible.
Yes, we will.
Okay.
I am confident that John will locate the web servers, load them in a pickup, and take them over to the DAS data center and hook them up.
Well, and Mr. Chair, I'm not sure we're going to physically do that, but we have been using DAS for some of our stuff, and I understand the efficiencies we can get from that, those sorts of things. Absolutely.
I will accept electronically packing them in the pickup and moving them to DAS.
Okay. Shall I go on?
Please.
On to the next page, 4-2, viewing IT from a DHS enterprise perspective, a departmental perspective. Strategy there is to make sure there are decision-making related to policies and priority setting for expenditures and use of IT and so on that is done at the DHS cabinet level in a central, looking at it from the departmental perspective. I mentioned centralizing the management of our desktops. Standardization, again, plays into that one. Another thing that we are in the midst of doing...
Representative Batteridge, are you part of the DHS cabinet?
I am.
So you're one of the members of the DHS cabinet?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great.
What do you mean by DHS cabinet?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lowe, that's the top management of the department. It consists of our division administrators, director, the deputy director, and the head of administrative services, and me. Let's see, where was I? Centralizing the IT budgets. Heretofore, we've had a very split-up approach to our budget for IT. We've had a central budget, and which is Office of Information Services, and then we've had spending going on in each of our divisions for PCs, PC software, contracts. Our development projects were funded from the divisions, although we managed the projects. They were came out of their budgets. Local support out in the field came out of the divisions. And so the result of all that is we had a very uneven spending pattern. For support out in the field, some offices got really pretty good support and some got not so good support. We mentioned the PC purchase inconsistencies. And so one of the things that we're in the midst of doing right now is centralizing those budgets and trying to start controlling them centrally. And in fact, when we get into the next section, we're going to talk a little about what we believe is a kind of a consolidated budget number for the divisions and OIS.
Let me ask a question in terms of, I'm not familiar, and I will freely admit that, with the reorganization plan that's out there. In this reorganization plan, are we bringing all these IT functions together and creating an IT division, since in DHS it seems that the services that you are delivering out in each of these program areas is dependent upon information technology to deliver that, it would seem to me that you could consolidate that into a single division with its mission is to support the other mission. Is that part of the plan, or?
Mr. Chair, that's essentially what's happening. As I mentioned the other day, we've had three phases of consolidation. The first one was 5 years ago when OIS was created, and a number of these things stayed in the division, and then the second phase started last year to bring a bunch of this people who are out in the divisions, budgets, central purchasing and standards and stuff like that. The third phase, which we have not yet gotten to, is to figure out what to do with local support people who are in the divisions. We call them LAEs, local area experts. And those people are somewhere between super users and technicians. They're not quite technicians, but they're more than super users. And so the next phase of this thing, which I suspect will be related to this reorganization, will be to complete that process of bringing in and figuring out how to do that desktop field support.
Is that that, Peter?
Well, I just wanted to be clear, too. They're not going to be a division. That the IS piece is not a division unto itself. I would argue from my own management philosophy that it probably should be, so that it would have the full faith and credit of its own division to help bring these other divisions and John can be on equal footing. But,
okay.
Well, I mean, we could discuss that with Bob.
Yeah, I was going to say, when we take a note, we will invite Bob to come in and discuss reorganization with us. Continue.
Another strategy from the enterprise perspective is to align the entire department with state standards. We participate in DAS's standard committees for the state enterprise. We work on aligning our own standards with DAS standards. We also are in the midst of developing some, increasing our number of performance measures around technology. We have some, not very many, and have a group that's working on that now.
John, on that area, I think it would be very helpful to Senator Yee. If you could articulate and identify performance measures that we did articulate out and discuss it. If you have any specific to any of the large projects, they're going that we can discuss them in the context, you know, if MMIS, we can talk in the context of those and bring out identified performance measures.
Mr. Chair would be happy to do that.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to add that if you don't give us good performance measures, you only get a dollar.
Mr. Chair, am I allowed to get on bended knee? At least only a dollar.
$1.
Okay. Let's see. The last one I want to mention is that, as again, looking at it from the departmental perspective, is to create a departmental plan to replace hardware and software that is obsolete. And as I said, particularly on the desktop, some divisions chose to put more money into this than others, and so we had a real mixed bag on the desktop as to who was up to date and who wasn't, and we're trying to get do a better job with the systems.
In the context of this upcoming biennium, are we addressing it from a central perspective, or do we still have those disparities among the separate divisions?
Mr. Chair, we are addressing it from a central perspective because we will not replace all of our PCs in the coming biennium. I suspect we'll still have some of those disparities. As I think I've mentioned, I know I've mentioned this to you privately, my long-term vision would be to have a totally leased desktop environment where we had a regular planned upgrades that would all happen at approximately the same time. I know with 7,500 PCs that wouldn't happen exactly that way, but my vision would be to have that kind of a desktop environment so that everybody has the same basic tools to use there.
So from a perspective in terms of, can we identify by division in the department in terms of where we are so we can understand, I know you'll have a detail out here in terms of what you're looking to procure, we have it in the context of, do we have a needs in there as well? In terms of, we say, this is we've set standards, and so, you know, is it going to be a delta between the standard and what we've planned in this budget to replace the IT?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the difficulties we face at going to standards, like some of like WordPerfect embedded in some of our client server systems, for instance. I'm going to talk a little bit about that in 7. We can put together information about what's there to try to figure out the need. I can tell you that historically, the department has not, how should I say this, the individual divisions of the department have not done very well at figuring out that gap between need and where they'd like to be. Currently, typically what they've done is they've purchased machines when they've had money. And so we don't have a lot of good information yet about some of that, although we do know what's out there on the desktop because of the work we did on Y2K to look at every desktop machine to make sure that it was compliant.
I guess since service and supply is not fluctuating that rapidly, you don't see it over by hand swinging. It's not a question of when they had money, it's when they've chosen to.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
The dollars have been there, they've just chosen to spend on something else.
Yes, I think that's accurate. Now you'll get the real story.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Doug Wilson, Administrator of the Office of Finance and Policy Analysis, Major Function Meeting Budget Director of the Department. I want to make sure folks understand that we try to support the IS information systems as much as we can, but we have a whole other sector of budget out there. It's called the client and the provider network. And sometimes as we make projections that are sometimes 36 months out when we start that budget process, those projections don't always hold true. It's just like the state economist makes projections or Intel makes projections on their marketing or sales. They don't, I mean, the one thing is going to be true, it's not going to be the same number you project 36 months ago. So in the past few years, we've been very lucky and very skillful at doing that in terms of balancing out between our major programs. We can't guarantee that that will be the case in the future, and so you get to the point where you have to make a very difficult decision. Do you serve the client if there is that need or growing caseload, or do you make investments here with information systems or whatever it might else be? And that's one of those difficult things that we often bring to the legislature in terms of our rebalance plans. As someone like Senator Eaton knows much about it, she's dealt with those for the past number of years. So it's one of those added sort of difficulties that we have to work through in this.
And I would add that I'm well aware of that. What I'm trying to get at is so that we stop a process of coming each time to the legislature and talking about a technology plan, but in reality it's never implemented because we go on a rebalance, take all the money out of service supply, go to something else, that we start understanding in terms of where we are and what our needs are so that we understand what choices we are making.
Right.
And so that is my intention of getting this information.
Okay. I'm right back here.
Okay. Okay.
My security blanket, Mr. Chair. The moving on to page 4-3, another one of our values is that employees who use systems will not need to become data processing professionals or experts. And in order to do that, to not make them have to do that, we have strategically want to provide appropriate levels of training. We want to do as much automation of maintenance and installation of software on the desktop as we can. And we also were looking at sort of how we deliver our services and our support, working on improving the help desk. And I mentioned local support personnel as part of that phase three a few minutes ago, and establishing some minimal knowledge and skills that those kinds of people have to have. One of the things that historically has happened is that those local support people have not been shared between divisions. And so we want to start doing a better job of that.
Can I ask a stupid question?
Representative Lowe?
No question.
No stupid question. Well, in your training, you provide appropriate levels of training, and I just had a kind of a thought, and I was thinking about all the workers as I'm trying to become more literate in this area and a better user of the equipment that I have. I'm aware that using a computer can kind of make you sick, hurt your neck, hurt your eyes, and all of that. Is part of the training that you provide loss prevention and health-oriented?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lowe, to be honest, I'm not sure. We have capability of, and there are some DAS people who do ergonomic.
Well, your security blanket back there is nodding, so I guess it must be so.
Where are you nodding? Yes or no? Mr. Chair, all I was saying that we do have staff, and I think there are two positions department-wide that do training and other work around safety issues, including the ergonomic and computer-related items that you were mentioning.
Thank you. Let's see. The next one is we want to provide the data that's necessary for a person to do their job, regardless of where that person or that data is physically located. That's, again, another kind of value that we're moving toward, particularly as we move to service integration. And one of the strategies around that is to try to do some web enabling of our major transactions. We want to try to allow access to our systems from anywhere at any time, again, with proper password and other kinds of protection. And another thing that we're moving toward is centralized data storage. Some of our client server systems, when they were first put into place, because of divisional skepticism about the reliability of the network, they wanted those databases to be decentralized, distributed, and as our network has gotten more reliable, we're now able with credibility to take those databases and start to centralize them, and that allows then somebody who is in the Medford office to go to the Grants Pass office, and the data, if it's central, they can get at it from there, whereas if it were in the Medford office, they would not be able to get at it easily from the Grants Pass office. So that will help us with enabling people to have access wherever they're located. The next value is to support the departmental reorganization. And
yeah.
I just had a question. I know a lot of companies go back through and periodically do kind of they audit by desktop kind of what systems people are using, because a lot of people have systems or software that we pay a lot of money for in licensing. Maybe not individually, it may not seem like a lot, but overall it makes up a lot of money, especially in a department as big as yours. When's the last time the managers did an audit, or you requested management do an audit on what was loaded on desktops and whether it was appropriate for the personnel that had that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, I'm not sure that we've ever done that. I think that's an excellent idea and something we ought to do. We did look at what was on the desktop around Y2K, but that was more, was it compliant rather than was it needed?
Was it appropriate for your work needs?
The other point I would make is that as we move to a standard desktop environment, it might end up being less expensive to have a standard package of things and a standard image than to start splitting it up. One of the examples is for instance, is the desktop suite. Our standard is Microsoft Office. And if you start breaking that up and buying a spreadsheet versus a word processor, it suddenly gets a lot more expensive than just buying it all at once. But again, to the short answer to that question is I don't think the department's ever done that, as a department, certainly.
I'm curious about the one section up of reducing overnight and weekend batch production run times. Last time I worked in the government office, our strategy was exactly the opposite. Have some of your huge batches of information, letters, and so forth be generated by the computer overnight instead of tying up office hours with that, so that staff could end up doing something else. Why is this a better strategy?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lowe, that's exactly what we are doing. We have our online transactions available in the daytime, and around 6 or 7 at night, those get turned off, and then we go into mainframe production runs, which produce checks, food stamp benefits.
Sure, but why are you trying to reduce those?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lowe, one of the problems that we have had in the past is that some of those runs overnight are so long that, or if there's a problem with a run, one blows up in the middle of the night, which they occasionally do. If there's a problem with a run, or if the run is so long and we end up having that run continue on after 8 o'clock in the morning. And so it means that those systems that people use for the online stuff, the caseworkers use to enter client information, those systems are not available.
Well, I get it. You're shortening the run time. You're not shortening the entire number of run times.
No.
You're just...
We are. In other words, something that might normally take from 8 o'clock until 3 in the morning now takes from 8 until 11. And so when we make that overnight runs shorter, we make sure that those systems are available at 8 o'clock in the morning for the folks.
Not only do I have to learn the jargon, Mr. Chairman, I also have to learn the unique way you apply the English language to the jargon. This is a bigger challenge than I thought.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lowe, I cannot apologize for the jargon, but I can apologize for how we apply the English language to it. We try to do better with that. Let's see, the last one is supporting of the reorganization of the department.
Well, it's John, before you get there.
Yes, sir.
Here's some little statements here up here. Updates, freezes, anywhere, anytime access. That smells like VPN to me.
Like what, pardon me?
A VPN. Virtual private network.
Oh, no.
Is that...
No, what we mean, Mr. Chair, by that is that we, one of the problems that we have is that the way our RACF, especially around our mainframe, is structured is that people can't sign on easily from a different PC in a different office. And so we want to make sure, and we also run into some problems with partners around some of that too. So we want to make sure that we set this up so that when somebody signs in, for instance, if you sign in a separate office, you have to use the so-called full context as you're signing. We want to make it easier for people who are working out of, maybe they work in a certain district in the state, and they may work out of one office on Monday, another one on Tuesday, and so on. We want to make it easier for them to do that, but that doesn't...
Okay, so this is related to mainframe. This is not talking about opening up VPN access.
No, and I'm not really, to be honest, very familiar with what that is.
Over the Internet, in terms of creating secure...
I see. Yes, I'm sorry.
Into the network.
We are, as I mentioned earlier, Mr. Chair, in the ORCA 2, we are going to be web-enabling that, which that's part of what that project is about. And we expect that we will do some Internet stuff through that. Metaframe also, as Representative Patridge probably knows, has an Internet capability, and we have been talking about trying to use that capability maybe for tracks, at least that one system. But as far as moving everything over the Internet, we're nowhere close to that yet.
Single logon. Are you looking at subsection X.500 directories to manage your user list?
Mr. Chair, I don't know if we've got anybody who knows that specifically, but the intention there is to what happens now is if, for instance, if you're using Metaframe and you want to log on to the FACES system, you have to do one log on. And then if you want to go into tracks, you have to do another log on. And it's time consuming and frustrating for people. The intention, and this is some ways down the road to be able to do this, the intention there is that the person would have a single log on that once they're in, they can get into whatever systems they're authorized to get into, not into everything. I know, for instance, AOL, which I use at home, has a thing called AOL Anywhere. You give it your sign-on stuff, and then you can go into password, portfolio, or portfolio, other kinds of things with that one password. And the intention there is to create something like that.
guess my concern here is that we don't start going down paths in terms of that our, that the DAS is working on in terms of creating a solution for external access into the internal network. That would be a function that I would think that we would work with DAS on, rather than going out and creating your own scheme in terms of, you know, how you're going to do that, as well as looking at like an XL 500 directory structure in terms of to manage logons and passwords. It could also be something that LDAP directors, I would see as something to work with DAS on in terms of central perspective. And then the higher DHS security manager. We just approved a permanent position at DAS, the state security officer, and I don't know in terms of workload and those issues in terms of would it be appropriate, or, you know, you've got such a large organization, I guess if we have a discussion with DAS in terms of where that workload is, do we need to have a specific body sitting in DHS on these issues when we've hired a person and given them the responsibility to manage security.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I have no problem with any of that. That's fine. We work with DAS closely on a lot of things, and we'll be happy to work with them on those. Let's see, support of the reorganization. One of the things we're going to do, it's going to be a long time before all these systems, if ever, really get brought together into one single thing. One of the things we're working on is trying to create some, strategically, to create some short-term quick-hit tools that people can use to have better access, MetaFrame as an example, to data from different program areas as they start to work together to make to collaborate on their delivery of service. Ultimately, the second bullet there, we hope to do some realignment of our systems to the new DHS, but I think that's going to be fairly lengthy and fairly some of it pretty expensive. We're also going to need to realign our own organization to support the new structure. I mentioned last week that one of the, moving to the next page, that one of the main things the department is doing is a lot more work with the collaborating with community partners. And we expect that need and that activity to grow considerably. And we are going to need to develop some processes for how we support those partners, how far down into their systems we go in order to make stuff compatible. I mentioned also the other day the potential for needing to look at the cost model. We currently deal with partners and supply services to them with no cost or no payment or anything, and so we need to sort of take a look at the processes that we use to support the community partners. Finally, the last thing we see strategically and need to try to do is to create a single view of a client so you can find out, you got a client, what services are they getting, what services have they gotten in the past, so you can again start to have groups in working in collaborative settings able to take a look and understand everything there is to understand about the client. And I know we had a significant conversation last time about confidentiality, and that's where that, of course, will come into play. How that plays out against that single view of the client still it remains to be seen.
Mr. Chairman,
Sorry.
So the single client database, does this mean one-stop service when after your reorganization if a client gets three or four services? They will all be compiled in one database for the client.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, all of the things in this section are strategic things that we'd like to move toward. That is certainly one of them, and everybody talks about and wants that. Personally, I think it's going to be a long time before we can get there because these, because of problems with definition of data, how those things are, how the systems are set up, I think we're going to probably be a lot better off trying to figure out a way to take existing things and have them work better together where we can look at them together rather than creating a single database. I think that's a
very expensive and very long-term thing to try to do.
President Buttigieg?
Just as a thought or something to offer up, I guess, I would be interested because of the cost of HIPAA and because of the multiple cost of repairing a plethora of databases which your agency touches base with. Maybe now is the appropriate time in trying to get some kind of evaluation whether you should, whether money should be spent to develop a new single client piece that will meet the HIPAA guidelines as opposed to trying to fix this plethora of databases up with the HIPAA guidelines. And I just maybe like the department to explore that from a cost basis analysis. It's going to cost you a lot of money. You're going to have to do a lot of, I know you have a lot of internal programmers as well, but we may be better off to just scrap the whole thing and move with the HIPAA standards coming on board and making that work.
Well, I mean, one of the things, which I would add to that is we need to start looking at the total life cycle cost of these things, not just this discrete project. Mm-hmm. It only cost us $1 million to build it, and we got the feds to pay for $1 million, but we don't bother to mention the fact that it costs us $5 million a year to maintain it after we've built it for $1 million. And I think in terms of, we need to be going back and looking at this. If we go and we fix these systems so they become compliant with HIPAA, would our cost be, or our investment be better spent upgrading it so that we get off of some of these old technologies that would allow us greater efficiencies?
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, I think that's a noble and desirable goal. And certainly we'll do what you suggest and take a look at that. My initial kind of gut reaction is that first of all, HIPAA really only deals with systems or parts of the systems that have to deal with healthcare. We've got an awful lot more going on in the way of business needs, federal requirements, so on and so forth that have nothing to do with that. And it is such a massive undertaking, it's pretty scary, but we'll certainly take a look and try to give you some thoughts about that. Ready to move on to Section 5,
let me interrupt you there. We are after 5 o'clock, so we will call it a day today, and we will come back again at this.
Thank you.
With that, we will adjourn without objection.
How do you know without objection?
Not 500.
We set the time of adjournment for the House Committee at 5 o'clock, so it's adjourned.